Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guest is Jared Murphy. Before I bring him on, I have to thank C60 Purple Power, the amazing super antioxidant that acts as a free radical sponge. It eliminates toxins in the body, and I feel better than I've felt in years. You really should, too. Go to their website to learn all about the product. Just click that link in the description or visit c60purplepower.com. You can use coupon code KNOWLEDGE10. If the link doesn't work for any reason, you're going to get 10% off plus free shipping. Also, subscribe to Forbidden Knowledge News on lbry.com. It's our official backup channel. We're always on all your popular podcast platforms. And we also have a brand new show called Beyond Classified. It's exclusively on Rockfin. And like I've told you before, Rockfin is an amazing new platform for free-thinking content creators and independent media. You'll find people like Rex Baer, Charlie Robinson, Sam Tripoli, Jimmy Dore, Whitney Webb, so many more are joining the Rockfin family every day. All those links are in the description, so you can check it out. And finally, you can now get tickets to Forbidden Knowledge NewsCon 2021, April 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, with 12 amazing presenters, including Jared Murphy. Just visit forbiddenknowledge.news to check out this year's awesome lineup and get your tickets today. Tonight, I want to welcome back to the show Jared Murphy. He is a self-experimenter and field researcher of ancient technologies and lost history. He has traveled the world searching for evidence of advanced ancestors and high technology. He is author of the book, It's Not Aliens, Worse, It's Us. Jared, welcome back. How are you doing tonight?
Great. Thanks for having me again.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. Every time you come on, I love the education I get. You're presenting so many extraordinary possibilities, not only about our ancient past, but you know who we really are. And I truly believe that your work and the work of others like yourself are bringing us closer to this nexus of understanding ourselves. And when I was asking you about some of the topics and talking points for tonight, you mentioned some really fascinating areas that we're going to explore, starting with people being the idea of people possibly being programmed or bioengineered. And you also mentioned how magnetic fields have been manipulated by currents so that frogs, for instance, can regrow limbs despite not being able to. After, you know, doctors studied the negative current, frogs could reactivate this ability. And that's really fascinating to think that humans could possibly have these same abilities. So let's start there. What can you say?
Who doesn't want to grow back a limb, right?
Right. Yeah, exactly. What can you say about the possibilities of bioengineered humans and, you know, the fact that we may have been able to do this for ourselves?
Yeah, it was an orthopedic surgeon in New York, and they've headed up and so just for everyone out there who's on the edge of their seats, I don't know how long to string you along when you're trying to think about growing back. But yes, the first thing is that they've applied it to very bizarre, like really hardcore fractures where either you've been in a car accident. And what they did was they experimented with animals that had broken limbs. And what they were able to find was that applying electrical current, first it was surgically implanted to like the point of the wound to try to directly manage the magnetic fields and the electrical current between the two broken halves of what in the past had been unfixable breaks, where it's like, well, we're just going to have to amputate at this point this connective tissue. There's not enough connective bone. It's not going to work. It's not going to grow back. And what they found was that you didn't even need to, in future experiments, they were able to start with animals, and then they were able to figure out that you could put the same electrical current impulses, like while you sleep, on the exterior of just a cast. So they didn't even have to implant any electrodes. None of that had to happen. All they had to do was place that current system on your arm or on wherever the cast was. And then salamanders are a known species that absolutely can grow back limbs. So the experiments started going on where it's like, okay, let's go ahead and surgically, I know this is for science, but they surgically would remove the salamander leg and they would measure the electromagnetic currents. So first and foremost, what I was trying to say for those on the edge of their seats, they've been able to apply this technology to electro this therapy has been used very effectively in severe breaks. So as you might be healing from something like a car crash or a traumatic work injury where your bone has truly been crushed in a way where they don't think they're going to be able to weld it back together, it almost has this magical ability to grow back, in a nutshell. And that's where it's been applied first. But in experiments, which are continuing, frogs in the evolutionary chain of things do not and cannot regrow limbs. So salamanders can, and they thought, okay, what's different? So they start looking at the electromagnetic. What I mean by this, let me back up for a minute. In 1940, there was a guy named Burr, and he started measuring the electromagnetic field around a fully grown, like just a seed of a plant. He was measuring the seeds. He was looking at the seeds. He was looking at the fully grown plant. He was looking at unfertilized human eggs and then looking at a person. And what they found was that the magnetic placements of everything, when looked, it didn't matter if it was a seed or an unfertilized egg. It looked like the fully grown creature. And later, there was a leaf experiment where you cut the third of the leaf off, and this ties into Carilion photography, which is kind of part of the naturopathic. Again, the big capstone on this is vibrational medicine, and that is the field of everything that some people will call woo-woo. On the other hand, it is the absolute yin and yang. It's one of them of what we think of as traditional science. And the yang here being vibrational medicine, and that we are all vibrational creatures. We are all not either if you're thinking like Ken Wheeler, we're not the cult of bumping particles. We are waves and frequencies, and we're bound in ways that we don't quite understand, but there's not a duality. We're not a particle and a wave and a frequency. We're all energetic beings that we're overlapping and connecting with each other and ourselves. And Carilion photography, it's Simon Carilion developed a photography that you can see the aura around a person or an object like a leaf. So what they found was they could cut a third of a leaf off and the whole leaf was still there magnetically. So think phantom limb on an amputee. We're going to get to that growing part, right? And so in the photography, they could also identify some other things which standard academia is not real fond of, which was things like cancer, other diseases, and there was an aura change depending on what was off. And the all along for the last decade, paleo, people who are paleo, there's some really, if you're really into it, if you want to look into it on the side, like Mark Sisson and Rob Wolf. Rob Wolf has some great gets really deep into the whole positive gene expression, you know, garbage in, garbage out. It seems like a simple expression. It's like, well, I don't want to be fat. Well, it's not about being fat. It's about eating things that help program your cellular system as you exercise and as you meditate and as you do everything else. All this adds to what has been talked about in TED Talks constantly of the placebo effect and people curing cancers, people growing things back, with a combo of correct eating and of mindset, things that like Dr. Joe Wallach had, the 90 for life guy, you know, the 90 for life vitamin guy who goes to all the conferences and everything. And the idea that, well, not every nutrient is in the food we eat anymore. Back to that engineered soil thing that we've been talking about for a few months now. So what does it look like to take a picture of a fully grown human that has a limb that's gone, and how the wound heals, and what they found with frogs and what they had found with other, as they were experimenting, was that there seems to be a negative charge to the cells that grow, a very particular negative charge that seemed to help or was just present as a salamander regrew the leg. And so the idea was, well, what if we recreate the same negative current structure during the wound in that area for the surgically removed limb of the frog? Well, they grew back. It activated a dormant ability. Now, this should make you nervous when we don't have the human body figured out and they're saying, yeah, we've identified like 6,000 junk genes.
Right. Yeah.
Doesn't exactly. that Doesn't that make you a little nervous? Like, you don't know. The best neurosurgeons in the world hold up their pinky and they go, we know about this much about the human brain. And I don't think you should assume that that might not be part of some collective conscious zip file that also includes multiple consciousness, repair mechanisms. There's a million things in our genome that we didn't even know we had a double helix or, you know, the DNA structure. I mean, we are like at a loss still on how this all this works. So here is this negative ionization. And what's really cool about it is that when they really got down to it, white blood cells were carrying some of that negative charge. And so when they're going at eliminating a cell, when we start mixing, because I talk about this in my book, and this is yet again the first time I'm talking about this on any show, including my own, is getting into, this is the value of you letting me come back, by the way. It's like we can finally dig into some of this stuff. And by the way, the book is still worth getting, everybody. But
definitely,
it's complex to like talk about how do you go from not aliens to polygonal construction to what we're talking about now, which is the vibrational and frequency medicine that we know of now includes work by a guy named Anthony Holland, who has a whole private sector business now. He was a director of music and a professor, and he figures out how to kill with sound, vibrational, and frequency and energy MRSA and leukemia and about 35 other viruses and about 40 other bacteria. And he does it with sound and frequency. And there's a TED talk about it. You can go watch it. But this is him picking up what a lot of people, again, here's a benefit. They're talking about Royal Rife's work. Royal Rife was a chauffeur. He was a guy who was a self-experimenter, just like Leonardo da Vinci / me. When you hear the word self-experimenter, I'm not saying I'm them. I'm just saying don't laugh at that anyway. So he decides to use what a lot of people do right now in the alternative health world. They will buy a Royal Rife frequency program to install on their computer. I think everyone should do their own research, but what Royal Rife was using was really high powered plasmas. The frequencies he was using were not something that come out of just a laptop computer. It wasn't just brain entrainment. It wasn't just a type of frequency or like a Tibetan's bowl. It was very specific. It was very strong. It had so much electricity involved. The bottom line is that work was picked up by Anthony Holland. And what that indicates is that as a frequency sound, and that's applying an external frequency and sound to destroy MRSA, to destroy leukemia. What's going on with the white blood cells, with their charge, their negative charge, is that it's not just a matter of a white blood cells eating like Miss Pac-Man, the ghost, you know? It's not like just eating a cancer. It's bringing a set of magnetic field systems to a cell that's out of tune, just like an externally directed wave frequency from like a Royal Rife machine. But instead, it's the actual cell itself delivering direct, almost cellular switching. Think just like a computer, a one and a zero. It's magnetically happening. And that's something that is really mind-bending, because we, in my book, I also talk, and again, it's piecing it all together now in a conversation is different than you reading it. And I'm sure, I hope it's explained really well enough that you can read it in the book and revisit it and study it further and dive into it. But I talk about Johnny Chong and his ability with Qigong to start paper on fire, to create electrical, like straight up people moving their limbs and getting healed from weird ailments. And his manifestation personally of Qigong, which is a many thousand year old practice in China and Asia, and Johnny Chong could direct these electrical currents. And the theory was, here we go again, that it had something to do with other mainstream scientific work that said it appears that at the mitochondrial level, and I include the reference for the paper in the book, but that at the mitochondrial DNA level, there is nuclear cold fusion going on. And here we have Becker and this orthopedic surgeon in New York working with magnetic fields and negative ionization to where frogs are growing back limbs, which is fascinating. You have Anthony Holland's work with external waves and frequencies, but we have this weird thing called a placebo effect and these other connective things like synesthesia. So what are we doing now with the idea that if a salamander can still do it, a frog can't, they can do it. And then you have too many examples of humans killing cancer, simply just thinking it away or growing back bone. So is it that we were once part of an engineered network of not only highly advanced soil, but our genome itself was simply set to repair itself? So we started out with a really great, we're going to go with a really great bait and switch where, wow, could humans grow back their limbs? Theoretically, we don't. Salamanders can do it. We're talking different species here. Why couldn't humans? But more importantly, who's to say you should grow old? Is it a mindset? Is it partially you being programmed to like, well, this is when you retire, and this is when you stop, and this is when you quit, and here's your mindset. But how is it that you're going to do a repair of not a missing limb, but of just an aging cellular system? Like, could you mindfully harmonize between your eating and the very frequencies? Does it have to be an applied external vibrational force through a device like the Royal Rife, Anthony Holland's work? Or could it be simply an internal manifestation, not just a meditation, but a mindset, a control mechanism that we no longer have conscious control of? So this can go a lot of directions depending on how you're feeling about it.
Well, it makes me think again of the Sumerian Kings list that, you know, these beings could have lived for thousands and thousands of years. Yep. Well, when you bring up this, you know, this information, it's like maybe they could have, you know, if they have the ability to regenerate and, you know, all these things that we can't consciously do anymore, but they had control of, you know, more of their brain power, whatever this is, that, you know, that's what it makes me think of.
100%. That was a great place to go. The Sumerian Kings list, it's not like there's one list either for everybody listening. They keep finding it. Like it's around, and there are, they literally list their Kings list as pre-flood kings, post-flood kings. They actually make a point to say it. And in the post-flood kings, they ironically do live. Some live, some rule for 1,000 years, some rule for 50, but it's not even in order. But is it like the pre-flood kings, which they list 8? And those 8 kings each rule for just over 32,000 years each. So like you got 8 kings ruling for 240 something to 267,000 years, depending on the kings list. And then either way, it's a significant amount of time to rule for 32,000 years. And then you have the post-flood where it's like this guy ruled for 300, 1,000. I list a lot of them out in the book. But the idea then is you have the Bible, same thing. You have Methuselah living to 1,000, Jared living to almost as old as Methuselah. The second oldest dude in the Bible is Jared. He lived to be like 994 or something. You know, he misses Methuselah by a little bit. And then you got Enoch not even dying and somewhere around 150, 160 years. He's just taken off the planet. I mean, that's literally in the book of Enoch. So we're not even going there, but these decrementing ages, sliver of truth in the Bible. And a lot of people say, well, the creation story in the Bible and the original creation story of Sumer and the story of Noah, it exists in the Sumerian, you know, so is it borrowed? The question is whether or not the Bible is unique from the Sumerian stories. But either way, you have slivers of truth. You have people living a very long time. And then you, again, and the Egyptians, they have a king's list. But their king's list goes back 36,000 years and nobody mentions longevity. But we have different examples like that Chinese, I'm blanking on his name. There's a Chinese guy that allegedly lived like 400 to 600 years. He ate only herbs. Do you remember who I'm talking about?
I do. Yeah, I don't know the name though.
Oh yeah, I can't believe it. I'm so sorry, everyone. You're gonna have to look that one up. But again, he had IDs that went into more current society that allegedly was him and that he had Ben, through diet and mindset, had been controlling his aging. And that's incredible. But the question what we're really posing again is, can we continue to do that? Could we reactivate that? And I think that even like the Wim Hof thing I've talked about in the past about controlling your inflammatory response, but well, look at the placebo effect. Look at these TED Talks where somebody is talking themselves out of cancer. There is something healing within the human system that is more than capable of eliminating bad cells, apparently in some creatures, set the right magnetic fields, and they're growing back limbs where they used to not be able to do that. Yet through Carilion photography, we see that even an unfertilized egg has the full magnetic adult field of what an adult human should look like. So what does that mean when it's not a leaf and it's not a salamander, it is a human, and you have those phantom feelings of a missing limb? Is it possible that we're just missing what we think is a very complex process? It's like, well, you have to grow one cell to one cell to one cell in this way and that way, and three-dimensionally it grows back like Deadpool, you know, like it looks right. Like Deadpool. Well, it may look like Deadpool, but it may go a little slower. It may go a little faster. Well, you know, if you count like a month or two or however long it takes for a salamander to grow back a full leg, right? So the plan, I think, would be is to see how these experiments, and I guess maybe more, you know, as we dialogue about it, taking more of shining more of a light on these people's research and continuing to see what progress they're making beyond. I mean, look, it's incredible for people who would have had a severed limb to have it amputated, to have bone growth and to have connectivity where, you know, maybe a section, you know, like where the bones are growing back together, where it would have been an impossibility. That's incredible. But the application of the idea that you grow back a missing limb, hugely valuable to those missing limbs. But even more valuable is, why am I choosing to grow old? Why am I changing? Why am I sick? Why do I just have a disease that I don't want to have? That's the tuning that through, and it's not the only work. When it comes to vibrational medicine, we think there are subsets of tinctures, for instance, or essential oils. So there's a joke when homeopathy was starting through a German scientist in the late 1700s, like cures like. They were finding essential oil combinations, herbal remedies that had the symptomatic effect of the diseases they were trying to cure. And what they found was that the more you copied, if you had a set of herbs that mimicked the headache, the nausea, the rash, or whatever came with a particular disease, they were finding that the cures were like the diseases. And this is the beginning of homeopathy in the late 1700s. And so then what happens is there's a dilution, and here's what's really interesting. Here's some of the most interesting things about vibrational medicine as a topic. And it's relevant to the whole, because the whole where we're at is, I would like to grow back a limb, not grow old, repair my cells, not have cancer, not be sick. I like the placebo thing, blah, blah, you know, there's all that. But I'm bringing up the cures right now because what they found was, is as they diluted whatever the mix is of whatever the herbal remedy was, is the weirdest thing was that the more they diluted it, the better the effect was based on experiments. So if you diluted something to the point where it was basically the shadow of the original essential oils or herbs, what you ended up with was essentially water that at a maximum had a vibrational footprint of the original herbs and the original oils. That's very interesting. And I bring it up because if we had a highly engineered earth and a highly engineered, look, we know that there's ancient engineered soil. We know that vast amounts of land were being managed beyond where we're at right now. However, what if it wasn't a matter of us even primitively like now crushing up a plant, crushing up an herb to make that remedy? Maybe that wasn't necessary because everything has a vibrational Carilion, its own frequency and set of auras and of what the, again, not woo-woo, just the actual magnetic current slash field of this particular plant that you're crushing up to eat to cure something. What if there was a point where we were so in tune with all of it, being in its presence, the essence, that where you're diluting it to the point where it's basically a shadow of the product itself? What if it was just a matter of being in the garden? What if that was the point of being fascinated by gardens, or just you're in your garden and just being around that frequency is giving you the cure that you needed, because it's just that added extra help for that white blood cell to manage that negative, you know, energy for that actual, not even as complicated as nuclear cold fusion, but it's literally what they've established now, which, getting back to this one point, is cellular switching. Why is that important? In itself, it's, we could dwell on the whole, wouldn't it be cool to walk through a managed garden that has all the healing effects of just the vibrational energy of all these plants? But on another level, if cells are, it was the idea taken, they were taken aback, the very idea that cells were switching, were basically acting as ones and zeros, were essentially doing electronic switching, like a computer, like any other electronic device. If that's true, then, well, it's true, but the speculation is everything on Earth, everything that we are, is this random collection of cellular structures, that it all is random. Or that, oh, well, we've been modified by the Anunnaki, or we've been modified in the past by our ancient evil relatives, or somebody came by, you know, just, we were here to do an anthropological study, but shit, they'd build pyramids faster if we helped them. And let's get that monkey over there and turn him into a guy. And, you know, they can build bigger crap. It'll be funny. Wait for it. No, wait 6,000 years. It's really funny. And then, you know, it could be that, right? But oh my gosh. The reality is, we might not be the only thing. If we're looking at the soil itself, the Nazca lines, all the things you talked about before, where you have a giant piezoelectric, we're talking about piezoelectric electronic switching going on in not just people, but plants and animals in a giant earth-connected, soil-connected system that is capable of retuning itself as it moves through the universe. And managing the frequencies and energies in a way that keeps things in order. What is an order? Don't grow old. Don't die. Don't get out of tune to the point that you have cancer. People worry about particular things. It's been proven. It's been discussed. You know, they worried about getting a particular kind of cancer. Crazy. They get that cancer in that area, or they're, or they've spent their life having a feel, you know, there's lots of examples of this, mind over matter, or the other way around. And in this particular case, the idea that the switching, we're using the terminologies that we'd use for computing, but it's not coincidental. I'm saying that what we think of as technology is not external. It's not a device. It's not implantable. It's not nanodust. It is the actual cellular switching that we're witnessing, that we're calling biological, is in reality a programmable system. And we're able to change that programming. We're thinking of it like kind of alchemy, like, yeah, you know, we're going to take a bunch of this and a puppy dog tail, and on a full moon, we're going to make gold. And, you know, we do that with our cures, right? We do that with our medicines. And we think that it's this, like, again, traditional medicine says, well, you need to have this much of a load, so your liver and your kidneys and your pancreas don't delete all this. And you need to have this big of a drug load. And, don't take that. It's worth nothing. It has like homeopathic dose level, you know, and that's a joke. Yet too many things keep happening now. And you have all these predictions in the last, since the 40s, since Burr, and now to today, with the experiments that are going on. And I think Ken Wheeler's work on magnetism and dielectricity, and reminding us of Steinmetz and Tesla's work, and what we really don't understand about electricity itself. When we start describing electronic switching by cells, we need to stop and say, we are easily a programmed biological, a non, There's no way to say it. We only have a term. If I say biological, you think natural. We're natural, but it's more like a programmed thing, a device. We are a self-contained, you know, advanced machinery. We're not, there's no mechanics in it. It's not like Westworld here. You know, we're looking at individual or what we call organics that at the cellular level are working in a very complex programmed way. And so we're the Anunnaki in that story. What we do know from that King's List, are they representing that society that blows past that 50, 60,000 year mark where that city off of Cuba that I keep bringing up is it, or the Bimini Road or the other things that are in the deep that were above water over 50,000 years ago? Are those cities representative of those kings and of that time period? Because our assumption about the King's List is, well, that's the King's List that goes up to when Sumer crashed. That's the idea that, oh yeah, well, the post-flood kings, they're talking about kings from the last 12,000, you know, whatever, you know, younger drives, we're calling it 11,500 to 13,000 years, right? So they're saying, oh yeah, that's, those are those kings. Well, what if it's the pre post 50,000 year old flood kings? What if it's that list? I mean, we think it's up to now, but what if it's just, there was 246,000 years of people really, really, really living on a worldwide government / one civilization. And I highly doubt that they actually liked each other, because when it comes to genetic, when we talk about the cellular switching, I've always as a kid been fascinated by the number of races on the planet. Like, why are they? Because the story is everything out of Africa and we were all one thing and then we all changed. Well, what if we were all programmed differently? What if it was just programming? It was just, was it personal preference? We know that there were giants. And by giants, you know, 7, 8 foot, 12 foot. I mean, that still 12 foot would be incredible. I mean, the guy who played the mountain in Game of Thrones just did a record-breaking squat, I think, 7 months ago. He squatted well over 1,000 pounds.
Wow.
And that's somebody who's like barely 7 feet, right? So what could a 12 foot tall person bench or squat? I mean, what were they carrying, right? But that doesn't explain the complexity of polygonal construction, but I'm not trying to go there. But the point is, did we program people like when somebody's born with gigantism? I was like, oh, that was random. They shouldn't have been. What if they were supposed to have 6 fingers and be 12 feet, but we didn't know how to complete the programming? And, or when somebody, you know, when we think of little people or dwarves or like the Cherokee moon-eyed people that they know of, and there are so many cultures, leprechauns, you name it. There's so many cultures around the world that have that story. But is it because it was part of a larger system where people chose their jobs, their careers, their fields, and it wasn't a random thing? It wasn't just random survival evolutionary techniques that people diversified. That's one possibility or subject. But the more fascinating one, I think, is, okay, if those kings lived 32,000 years apiece, was it just them? And are they remnants of that ancient high-tech society? Which is cool. But then again, why are there such big statues in Egypt? The really big ones? I mean, were you guys that impressed with the people who created the tools that could do that? Were you that narcissistic? Or was it that there was a window where the only way to control what was left of a worldwide population was to subjugate them under gods and to create 1,000, 2,000 ton statues and create cities and ways for them to worship in ways that controlled what was a descending worldwide population of advanced humans? There was less of them and more of some catastrophic survival, you know, list, like where we are, where we think these 150 tribes around the planet are just, you know, they're just living there, they're just banging rocks, they're nobody. But the reality is they are part of our collective human consciousness. Do they represent survivors of survivors? And are we also those survivors? And as we're crawling back up with our tech, are we really just survivors of some other catastrophe? So on a lot of levels, it's, I wonder about the Egyptian pyramids and about that. Well, at least Tanis and Karnak and the temples where you see the big statues, where it's like, okay, was this done? If not, if those are not dynastic, if they are actually part of that ancient megalithic culture, did they do it actually for some nefarious reason, you know, to rule?
Right. Yeah. Huh? That's a very interesting thought. And, you know, you were talking about how it's basically programming. And if we wanted to reprogram ourselves now to be able to have these abilities, I mean, that would be a major task, because we've been basically reprogrammed by pharmaceutical industry, by the food, water, by everything for thousands of years. And to get back to that, it would take a complete reboot, and I'm sure it'd be a huge threat to the pharmaceutical industry if we had the ability to self-heal, and, you know, there'd be no need for that, you know?
Well, I think the most base element is that what they hear is a revolution. They hear a loss of control. As people wake up, when you're fully conscious and we're connected to that greater network or everything else that we could be doing that would seem like magic now, I think that threatens people who have been, I think, enjoying a system without getting into who they are. But in the last couple hundred years, I think they've enjoyed a system where they don't really live any longer any better than the rest of us. I think they do, and that's what's scary. I don't think they've applied or have extra access to this high technology, or that they use it any differently. I think there'd be very, very subtle notices of that. I think we would know it. But what's interesting is that instead of you owning a really expensive hospital with a lot of equipment, with machines that go bing, shout out to Monty Python, the reality is that you would have a meditation center. And maybe money as you know it, you know, may not be needed, but a group setting like the Power of Eight, and the idea of, again, why do the same experimenters like Burr back in the 40s, one of the things they were experimenting with was, do healers really work, or are they charlatans? You know, it doesn't matter the religion. It didn't matter. What mattered was they said they were a healer, and they were seeing results with seeds and plants growing. And there was, again, there's an effect on a magnetic level that was, again, it sounds hippie, but good vibes, literally good vibes, that work was actually making a difference. And so the idea of the classic person who's in a pharmaceutical job going, well, I got to sell this many pills tomorrow. I don't care how much meditation you want to do. There's no money in that for us. Well, the reality is that I think there's going to be a transitional period where whatever it looks like to gather a number of people who have similar ailments or healing abilities, or however it looks to have a group in it, there will be some way to make money. But I think these dialogues usually go with, screw them. They're going to lose all their crap, off with their heads, guillotine sort of talk. You know, I don't think that that's the necessity. I actually think that the paradigm shift needs to be out there for the people in those higher power positions to understand that if your best conclusions, even if you do have access to some secret files, if you're at 10 to 15% conscious, which, I mean, was Einstein 20% conscious, or was he just like 10% of his possibility conscious? There's something people don't think about. I mean, there's people who are dumb as a bag of hammers and they're at 15% consciousness. And you got people that might only be 9 or 10 of their own potential, and they could be way beyond their level of consciousness. Then they could be even at 15 or 20 or 100. And so when you have people all at the same basic, and I think sometimes we vertical will spike. I don't think we're permanently attached to a lesser consciousness. I think depending on what you eat, how you work out, how you meditate, I think all of us experience spikes. So it's not, I've reached a plateau, I'm now the Shaolin monk level 20, and I will not drop below because I'm now this skilled. That's not it. It's not just a matter of waxing on and waxing off weekly. I think you got to keep, I think it's more of a, you can keep doing the methodologies, but then when you get a certain level, when you need to call on that whole concept of the car rolls over and the little 120-pound mom rolls a car off of her kid and gets them out, you know, that happens. So the question is, what superhuman abilities are we activating in those moments? And so how conscious and how present and how powerful do we become in moments? But then we want that all the time. And you're right. Why are these companies going to want to change the system? They don't want to change the system. It's pretty apparent. And especially with everything going on. And worse, there are people who are so programmed with fear, they're not doing their own research. They're not doing their own conscious evolutions, which require a willingness. That's the crazy thing. You don't have to know anything. You can literally listen to this podcast and then walk away. I'm like, I have no idea what they were talking about, but just start with one. Start with Carilion photography. Just start with, can frogs grow back limbs? I mean, start, I don't know, or electronic cellular switching, you know, there, search that, or Johnny Chong, Qigong. That's a CHI. But you could, you know, you could start with these things, and then that ruling class or whatever's manipulating the situation. It's like, you're right. It's like, who needs to eat a pill if at best you need a tincture, a homeopathic remedy? And again, this isn't pills are bad. By the way, pharm is bad. That's not it. They're all banging on the blinky box. Only now they're getting more than the yellow. I always say that there's an orange light or a red light, and it's really the control panel to a 747. I mean, we're all using our consciousnesses to a point where I don't think there's a diabolical, like, if they would just, it's not like a Simon Says thing where you push the damn game, the right buttons in the right order, the right colors, and then you're going to get a total unlocked door to the next level, where they're like, well, you know, we're the pharmaceutical companies, and we know if they knew the following, the box would unlock. I don't think they know either. They've just come up with some of the fractions of the sciences we've repieced together. And again, by banging on the blinky box, they've gotten extra colors now. There's like a yellow button and an orange one. And if you stay somewhere between yellow and orange and not the red button, you cure cancer, at least we think. And then it works, at least to a point. So I think there's different layers of that, but it's frustrating because, you know, I wish we could sit here and say, wouldn't it be nice to just go, yeah, you know, Sleestack John doesn't want us to know crystal technology, and we want to be out of the land of the lost and walk through the dorm, you know, the pyramid door. I mean, God, I'm bringing that up again lately, because if you've never seen the original Land of the Lost, they had pyramid transport doors with crystal technology, I think, and they were lizards from underground. I mean, come on, that is kind of funny, right?
That is, that's like, hilarious.
Who was smoking what to come up with that in the 70s when it's like a current theory, right? How did they, reptilians, and I'm not a reptilian fan other than that it's a genetically modified human to live underground, maybe by the Earth's core. But their crystal technology, pyramid transport centers, and that creepy alien that looked like stars that lived in the black room in his secret spaceship. Anyway, digress.
Yeah, man, that's crazy stuff.
A little lighter for everyone.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to bring it back to which you briefly mentioned, the connection to advanced biocomputing and that we are programmable, and the connection to engineered soil. I'd like to talk a little bit more about that and how, you know, what are these connections to our, you know, our biological processes and this advanced engineered soil that possibly existed.
So one of the things that I think we've touched on this a little bit is that, so if you have an engineered soil, the first thought was, okay, it's 100 times more nutritious than regular soil, so it's good for growing food. But one of the things we have to realize now is that we also have aeroponics, which NASA developed in the 70s, because the idea was, could you atomize water to an absorbable layer for roots? And could you travel through space with plants and not have to have a lot of dirt and use less water and travel long distances. So aeroponics and 3D printing do represent an ability for us to create food without soil. So so when I keep talking ancient engineered soil, I'm not just saying they had to create a lot of soil to grow food. I'm suggesting that the piezoelectric properties are there because it had to do with communication. And so for those that haven't heard this, the quick repeat is the megalithic buildings that we find with the polygonal construction, and there's keystone cuts in them, which seem to have conductivity because the stones are always high quartz. They're exactly what's in your phone, your computer, the quartz crystal that is responsible for your computing. And you can grow crystals. So this is an interesting thing, is that you have these giant buildings that are not just earthquake proofed, but they are clearly capable. And this is where some of our field work has to continue to go, is what is the very shape. A lot of it in the polygonal construction was chalked up to, well, this, if all these cuts are in this particular order, we've measured in the ground 3 miles over this way is this kind of an earthquake. And when this earthquake goes off to the surface up to this building, well, if we build a building with this, these kind of geo cuts, that it's going to stop that earthquake. But there has to be more to it. And the idea is that if you have ancient engineered soil that's connecting to the buildings and the foundations themselves, and you have giant earth circuits like the Nazca lines, the assumption is that, well, they're transmitting, but aren't they also receiving? So what is transmitting that the Nazca lines, the Jordan / the Bolivian Nazca lines, is it possible that these giant earth circuits and these ley lines that we frequently talk about, how, oh, it's really interesting, a lot of these megalithic sites seem to be on these natural power lines that are in the ground, in the earth, with the planet. And is it possible then that as we go through the solar system, the planet moves, the planet hits another ion storm of some kind, it shakes the frequencies are being managed by these pyramid energy systems / other buildings that are gone. The ionosphere is tuned to a point, but you and I are walking along and you get cancer and I get a cold and both of us are irritable. And it's because at this point in the galaxy, we've been spinning and we have now spun through a whole range of some burst from some neutron / black hole / you name it. We've hit a frequency that we can't tune out. And it has caused you to have a disease and me to have a disease and both of us to be irritable or one of us to be super happy. But the emotional context and what's happened to us has changed to the point where none of our larger systems could fix it. So as if you're programmed and can connect to the plants and the animals who also sense, like plants vibrate essentially with the sun, right? There is a frequency 512, I think it is. And the issue is they're not just vibrating to get energy through photosynthesis and they take on sun energy, but it's if all of us around are connected to each other, they're going to know when a frequency is off. So the only way to communicate and connect everything and everything on the planet is to have a soil that is able to we already know from like great books like Born to Run that when you're barefoot on the ground, there is an electron exchange. And again, the actual electron as a particle is a theory by J.J. Thompson that he actually created the electron theory, won an award for it, but even he didn't think it was an actual particle. It was theoretical. And again, touching the ground grounds you, but we're not thinking about the energy coming back up to us. We're just thinking, oh, we have this positive discharge to the ground to help realign us magnetically and everything else. Well, what wouldn't be the point then, irrelevant to whether or not you take a Carillion photo or not and see your aura or a leaf's aura or anything else? The issue is, what is the mechanical system that delivers to you the vibrational or frequency or negative charge to whatever part of your body that needs it based on you not even knowing that you have cancer or I got strep? How does all of it connect together for it to be a single functioning system, if not through the soil? And through the air or through like some quantum switching and exchanging, collective human consciousness, the pineal gland, the idea that like synesthesia, we know for a fact that at least the estimate now is like up to 25% of the population has these abilities. This is where your five senses not only connect to different things outside of you, like numbers, colors, smells for you internally, but one of the abilities is for you to sense and feel someone else's senses. So if someone else is being hugged, you can feel the actual hug. You can feel or not like sense that they're being touched, but like it feels like you're the one being touched and it's identical. And that means that there is other switching and contact through not just the ground and soil, but starting with the ground and soil, you have the buildings, the animals, the plants, and everything being connected through the same piezoelectric system. You're literally walking on it. And then on top of it, you have a collective consciousness that's spanning out like slivers of truths again in the Bible. In the beginning, we could apparently speak with animals. We didn't kill animals. I quoted in the book that, you know, the baby would sleep on the cobra's den and everything was good. Then the flood happens and it's a free for all. Everybody kill and eat everything. You know, forget about your little friend Bill who was screaming to you about cancer last week. You know, eat the dog, you know, or whatever. And so now we have a different system, but I think that it was wired. I think the slivers of truths are that the biological system wasn't designed for it to break down to where the only way to consume, not that we don't consume, but the system has been, this is the safe mode part of it. I don't think we were supposed to eat and break and burn the majority of the system. So this is not, by the way, an advocacy to eliminate the human race, by the way. I think there are too many people. It keeps rearing up every now and then. They're like, oh, we need less people. I'm like, well, we need less people who kill people for their religion, who they marry, you know, like if they're a witch, literally this, you would think this is the 900s, but there are still people being stoned to death for marrying the wrong tribe, let alone being gay. It's unbelievable the breadth and width of human people on this planet still magically pretending it's the Renaissance. It's not okay. It pisses me off to no end, but it doesn't mean, unfortunately, I do believe the collective consciousness where it is why Leonardo da Vinci came up with corkscrew planes of wood. And now, although we keep building on five people's science. I don't think it's that simple. I think the hunches and guesses we get collectively as a society is because we have 8-ish billion people on the planet, and all those people that a certain class of people there. So there's a system that says, well, at a very high level, we don't need all these people and I don't need all these servants. We can get rid of 33%. I don't think that's a good idea, because I think that the total collective human consciousness is what's giving the RAM for the inspiration. In fact, there's been other theories about how you don't have everything contained within your memory system, just within your body, that it's contained within that aurora, that magnetic field around you, that you are tapping into a collective human consciousness, even for some of your immediate memories. And so the idea that the guy in the jungle who's living very simply is invaluable, well, his very existence, not to reduce it to a Matrix level, like he's a battery, Neo, he's a battery. This is the case of every collective human being relevant on the planet, because it's adding to the scope and breadth of our abilities to be conscious again in a way that we haven't been for thousands of years at this point. So that being said, now what does it look like then to reboot, reactivate these soils, live and move congruently, where we're not our first thought through some of these abilities of connecting to each other? Part of it's to synesthesia. I'm bringing it up because, yeah, you can sense what someone else is feel, you know, what they're feeling, how they're being touched, stuff like that. That's one elementary level. But the other part is, okay, what about the abilities then to see beyond our planet? We're assuming that everything we're looking at is here. There is a possibility that collectively we have the ability to see deeper within the planet. And I don't mean hollow cavities and sleet stacks. I mean literally systems, right? Until recently, we thought the largest creature on the planet was Pando. the aspen tree system. And I have a picture of it, and it's tens of thousands of trees. It's really one living entity. And now they found a fungus that's even bigger, and it's underground. Well, why have that kind of connectivity? Is just a random thing, or is it a remnant subsystem of a running engineered planet that had everything tuned in together? There doesn't seem to be a reason why we can't regenerate. There has been too many religions across every planet of a piece of the planet that says at some point we either lived forever or lived indefinitely or lived for a very, 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 very long time. So to get back to that, is it really an external alchemy, or is it this internal power Rubik's cube? Like, I need these cells to be this charge. And is that accomplished through ingesting something? Is it through a song? Is it through literally passing through a magnetic field? Is it external, like the Royal Rife, Anthony Holland's work? So where do we fall into reactivating when we have the remnants of these polygonal buildings, the soils and everything connected? And it is a massive monumental process. So if I haven't tabled enough homework for everyone.
Right. Well, you mentioned the pineal gland. I want to get into that, because how important do you think that is as, you know, being a part of reactivating these abilities?
I think it super sucks, because I think it's important. It just, it doesn't seem like the mental appendix, does it? It's just, you know, you got the Egyptians, the Eye of Ra, and the Egyptian eye looking like the pineal gland split open, and it's too freaky. It's too freaky. You can't say, of all the things that you ever see made up in all the mythologies that we look at, you can go from 0 to 100 and forget conspiracy or any kind of alternative research. If you can't look at the pineal gland and look at the eye and go, any example why, again, the mythos within India with the third eye, that's just the craziest thing. What's the point of having... There's no way that it was metaphorical that the third eye wasn't a functioning third eye. There's just no way. So now we have the stories of, based on our water, the fluoride is supposed to calcify. I mean, from what we can tell, the pineal gland has ocular nerves. Why? Why does it have ocular nerves? I mean, it doesn't make any sense unless it's seen something. And we already have something. Do you know the term second sight?
Yes. Yeah.
So a lot, for anybody listening out there, the issue is not seeing the future. This was known during Roman times. I mean, it goes back way in our history. Second sight was being able to actually see something that was going on somewhere else simultaneously, and not and be there, kind of like it's not the future, but it is second sight. And I can't help but think that these were regular everyday abilities, and your pineal gland is like, it'd be like you losing your screen on your phone, but still be able to make a phone call. You know, I think it's kind of like that, where we don't even know all the capability. It goes back to that neurological, neurosurgeons going, we know about this much about the human brain, and look at what it can already do and what we're already accomplishing with it. But this, you literally have a dot on everyone's head on a third of the plant, on a third of the human population. They put a dot on their head for their third eye. We have it in Egypt. We have it all around the world. The significance of a second, either a second sight, this higher consciousness existing. So I think the mythos is there to point to that sliver of truth, which is it's a reality. I think our genetic expressions, including these abilities, are part of the echoing fundamental basics of what we could probably do. Again, without thinking about it, it wasn't something you had to turn on. It's something that has been dormant, because I do think those soil elements and other, what we think of as natural, I think that somewhere between certain trees, funguses, bacterias, plants, that all of it working together gave us these full functionalities. And that in lies a problem. It's like, well, what's the big go-to? Do we start with the soil? Do we start with the soil and the constructions? Do we, although we're continuing genetically, as we realize the human body through what it eats and its very mindset has the ability to heal and shape the body itself. Does that mean we can modify not only our age, but does it mean that we can modify what we look like? You know, why the legend? I can't believe I'm bringing this up. I've never done this. Think werewolf / vampire deal. I mean, why would it not be possible to mutate again your size? You need to be taller, more gigantic, or smaller. It would look like magic. But Ray Kurzweil talks about this in The Singularity Is Near through nanotechnology, that, you know, once we can repair a single cell, all cells age. For freak out for everyone, if you didn't know this, every cell in your body dies and replaces, and you're new definitely within a year. Every cell in your body's been replaced within a year. I literally don't see someone for a year. You're literally looking at a new person. That's freak amazing. People out.
That does. That is very freaky. I did not know that.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Took really good care of ourselves for a year straight, we could basically reboot our health and, you know, just we were really diligent about it.
Yeah. Yeah. So like you see people who recover from certain things, or they have cancer and they go through chemo and then they recover. It's like, yeah, they're recovering, but they're literally replacing every cell in their body also. So as you do that, and I've heard different numbers. I've heard it's every, I think Kurzweil talks about it originally as in it happening within, many things are replaced within 23 to 28 days. And then there's some things that are done within 3 months. Some things are done within 6 months, but hands down, you're not the same person in a year. And so why not choose to be not, I'm one day going to retire, but why not give yourself the mindset that I can't wait to live another year and I'm just getting started and I'm young. So young. Just that mindset. And then how else to program it? Well, positive gene expression has been garbage in, garbage out. Well, start putting in highly nutrient foods, a supplement as you need to with vitamins. But I've been experimenting with aeroponics now for 7 years with just how many nutrients can I put into, so aeroponics is just atomizing water. It's like those misters you get if you live in a hot climate, you go to a bar and they have those misters that, you know, you get wet, but it immediately dries. That's atomizing the water down to such a micron size. And that's what true aeroponics isn't just squirting roots. It's atomizing the water so that the roots can absorb the nutrients, and trying to get the right amount of vitamins. Again, it changes the delivery system. And people always say, well, eating healthy is hard because it's expensive. Well, you're thinking the volume that you eat when you don't eat healthy things. What happens is your body looks for the nutrients it needs in every meal you got. You stuffed your stomach, but they're like, well, there's like 8 nutrients here, and I'm looking for literally, that's like the 90 for life kind of deal. It's it's okay. Well, I need nutrients. So you eat a big meal, you're full, and within an hour or two, you're hungry. And one of the points of switching to paleo is that you're never hangry. Paleo is a lifestyle. It's not a diet. It's just the idea is there's so many foods the human body should eat, and you should get some extra supplements if you don't get all those nutrients. But all said and done, what I was getting to is that people think, well, I know how much I eat. If I buy healthy, I'm going to eat a lot more. It's going to be really expensive, you know, but that's not true. The more nutrients you get in a quantity your body can absorb, like Dr. Alejandro Jungan's work, Clean and Clean Gut. And I mean, he's written like sold millions, and he was a heart surgeon that had to fix himself with the gut. Gut biome is new news to us. Gut biome. It's like, there's a course to become a doctor. There's like one course on diet. And I've even heard specialists tell me, as I've researched this, specialists have said, I had a kidney specialist tell me once, look, Jared, just eat whatever you want. Your body sorts it out. It's no big deal. And he was a kidney specialist, just like, just eat whatever. And so now, you know, that programming through the food and getting those high nutrients, you eat less. And you eat less because your body can process and build with what it's eating. And once it's building and doing what it's eating, if you have a mindset that you're young And I'm not saying this is going to be easy. This is not easy. I do not have it figured out. This is self-experimentation, folks. This is exactly why you're listening. We are putting down a gauntlet, and all you got to do is experiment with your own body and life forever. And that's it. You are in charge of your health, and too many people, it's a cliche, people take charge of their health when they're sick. Then they become an expert in whatever they're sick with. People become their best advocates, their own advocates. They have to be. There are groups about this. This is not a joke. It's a big deal. But I'm saying be your own advocate just being healthy. Just be your own advocate now and enjoy and love your life and work on it. Because like you said, so now we have this clue board again of ancient engineered soil, some piezoelectric stuff, electronic switching happening at the cellular level. And we're getting that. Okay, so here's what's important about the electronic switching. One of the magic keys seems to be negative or positive magnetic fields. So that's very interesting. Well, we've assumed all along that the natural setting for this planet is, well, we know that the Earth has a wobble. We know that our poles have shifted. We know that our poles do shift. Maybe they're supposed to shift. But the way we plant, the way we organize as a society, the way literally where we live, I'm not saying we all should live in a bunker or like in a single building with cots, but this ties into something I'm working on now in the second book, which was Acropolises, where you have underground cities of the dead, where it's just cove after cove. I think some of the most ancient ones survive from rock cut ruin days where people had to live in shelters where those were actually sleeping chambers. They were not for the dead. I think the Romans and the, you know, various societies added them, but I think some of these underground systems where they bury the dead were actually part of sleeping areas for groups of survivors from ground catastrophes or temporary shelters. But side note, so for now it's connecting these abilities with where you're at, and we can control our personal health and we can control our personal activity. But then there are people like again, Wim Hof, Stieg Severinsen, Breathology guy, and more that have reactivated conscious control of their immune system, conscious control of their inflammatory response. They're not, and that means cooling, heating, inflammatory. And then this mind over matter thing that keeps getting talked about in every other TED talk by every other mainstream scientist. The reality is that there is something here that we're not fully catching. And the vibrational medicine aspect of it, which is what homeopathy and every aspect of what we think is right down to tree hugging sciences. But these are real sciences that in the world of vibrational medicine, I think are going to line up again with the idea that you personally, through your genetic memories being drawn to being a gardener, it might not be that you're a gardener. It might be that you were actually a doctor. That's an idea.
That's a very fascinating thought, man. You've given us so much to chew on tonight. I thought by closing out tonight, we could talk a little bit about, you were telling me some digs that you're going to be going on in the near future and some trips you're going to be taking. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about what you got upcoming.
Yeah, I am planning work in New England, and I will be, I'm really excited about it. Dennis Stone, America's Stonehenge owner. This is a 3-generation family site that's been on America Unearthed with Scott Walter, and it's been showcased many, many times. There's the New England Antiquities group that has been, was founded by Dennis's father. They, of course, they've been doing OSL and ground penetrating radar, LIDAR, but that's a 110-acre site. And I'm hoping to do some engineered soil work because the site is at least 8,000 years old. There's megalithic pieces on the site. So the scope of our work is to look at the soil. And of course, there could be a dolmen on site. There's a lot of things that they're discovering. This site has been active for 70 years. And they've just found, no one had noticed, by the way, I don't think a lot of people have talked about this, just so for your benefits. So Dennis and I were talking just a few weeks ago. There are serpentine walls that were never noticed, serpentine shaped walls that, again, this is going to be more contemporary cultures in the last few thousand years. But the point is there are serpentine walls that they've been clearing trees. But in 70 years that people have been looking at this site, that they've managed it, nobody noticed these serpentine walls, that they were walking right by them. And that's just like a cool discovery. But I'm looking at the engineered soil. I'm looking at the megalithic size stones that I think were pulled in to create America's Stonehenge from other sites. So there are some, like, I'm not giving you all the details, but I'm planning that trip. I'm planning that work. I'm planning it with an archaeological, staff, people that are going to be partnered with me, that we're covering the professions here as far as all the work that has to be done. And then I'm excited. I am, in reference to soil, super excited about a trip that, it's not a trip. I'm not going to visit, I want to go like everyone and go look at the big stuff. I want to go to Ollantaytambo and Sacsayhuaman, and I want to do the touristy stuff too, but I want my own photos with my own eyes on it. But we're working on planning due to the certain circumstances right now. It is difficult, but we are planning an actual archaeological dig. Again, myself and my archaeological partner, and we will be broadcasting from these locations, but we're there. We are going to do work. We're getting equipment. And of course, it'd be cool to find a mummy, but I'm not interested in mummies and gold. I'm interested in soil. So I'm going to actually dig up and find not just terra preta, but something that something that no one has really researched is how big of a foundation are these structures sitting on? How deep are the structures? Some of them, are they 20, 30, 40 feet deep in some areas? Are they on bedrock? Is it bedrock? Is it a compressed, what we would do for a modern foundation is compress about 18 to 2 feet of rock, and whether it was mud or sand or whatever our base was, at least in the upper Northwest, you know, we have basements, and in our areas, I know a lot of people have basements throughout the country, but you know, a lot of lower half doesn't. And so for us, the idea is how big are the footings and what are the complexities? And those are some of the things I've chatted about on calls, but no, I haven't talked to anyone about doing exactly this, which is we're planning to go do the actual work to start proving this stuff out. And I'm really hoping that the season that we can start this, I don't think I'm being optimistic. I'm hoping that with the planning, the maps, the amount of work that goes into this, it's months and months. It's been going on now we've been looking at it for like 3 months now, but to get it all done and to get in the field, I really hope that I'm optimistic that the borders and things and, you know, what we can say for the channel, that it's going to open up and that we would be able to execute and actually be on site in South America this year. And I'm really hoping that's sooner, like by sooner, I'm hoping the next 6 to 7 months, and not that has to be the end of the year or anything, but we have to plan some equipment, and it's just complex. And so that is what's on the table right now to be done, you know. And of course, open lecture period, I'm looking forward to the conference in April. That'll be, I'm open tonight.
Yes. Yes. That's going to be great.
So that's coming up.
We got you, and we've got a round table with you and Jim Willis. So that's going to be very interesting to see. Looking forward to that very much.
Are you interested in, if we get all the dates and everything worked out, are you interested in grabbing a shovel and coming down to South America?
I'd love to. Just keep me up to date, and, we'll see what's going on.
I'll reveal more details as we go. The problems are economic too. You know, there's a lot of logistical security and other reasons why not to bring up specifics, but it's cool. I'm super excited about it, because to go from what I've been able to research and do now to being able to get out in the field and being able to have, I mean, it's amazing. I mean, Scott Walter of America on Earth, you know, he has a lab right here that can do a crap load of investigation. And I'm hoping to utilize that lab and some others I'm very fortunate to be in Minnesota with the mining community. So much mining in Minnesota. So much equipment and so many experts. It's a great area for digging. I mean, on a monumental and a tiny scale.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
And yeah. My archaeological partner is here. You know, she's ready to go, and we'll be talking more about it too, I suppose. But yeah, I'm excited to at least get out some of these random details with you.
Definitely. Yeah, I'm so looking forward to, you know, finding out what you can uncover by seeing these things yourself, because that's what we need. You know, it's one thing to talk about these things, but to get out there and get your hands dirty in it, that's really great. And Jared, I really appreciate you coming on again and educating us. This was fantastic.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me on. I'm looking forward to next month.
Yes, sir. And until next time, everyone else, have an excellent evening.